Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Ruby Rogues podcast. This week on our panel, we have Eric Berry.
Hey there.
Dave Kimura.
Hey, everyone.
Nate Hopkins.
Hello.
Andrew Mason.
Hey, everybody.
I feel like I missed somebody. Did I miss somebody? I don't think I missed
anybody. Me.
David Richards.
Hello.
Sorry that the pictures keep moving, and that's how I was keeping track, and then they moved. I'm Charles Max Wood from devchat.tv, and this week we have a special guest. This is a friend of mine, Manny Vaya.
All right. Hey, Manny Vaya.
Here
in the house. I know it's one of those last names that people love to mess around with, so
just, it's fine. I've only known you for like a year, so.
Yeah. We only get on a call only once a week.
Yeah, that's all. This episode is sponsored by Sentry.io. Recently, I came across a great tool for tracking and monitoring problems in my apps. Then I asked them if they wanted to sponsor the show and allow me to share my experience with you. Sentry provides a terrific interface for keeping track of what's going on with my app. It also tracks releases so I can tell if what I deployed makes things better or worse. They give you full stack traces and as much information as possible about the situation when the error occurred to help you track down the errors. Plus, one thing I love, you can customize the context provided by Sentry. So, if you're looking for specific information about the request, you can provide it. It automatically scrubs passwords and secure information, and you can customize the scrubbing as well. Finally, it has a user feedback system built in that you can use to get information from your users. Oh, and I also love that they support open source to the point where they actually open sourced Sentry if you want to self-host it. Use the code DEVCHAT at Sentry.io to get 2 months free on Sentry's small plan. That's code DEVCHAT at Sentry.io. So do you want to give a brief introduction to who you are, and then we can dive into this?
Yeah.
This is stuff I geek out on, so I'm super excited.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about productivity today, but I want to give some background. Like, I used to be an engineer, so I studied physics, then I studied engineering. I used to write lowest level assembly code for DVD players back in the day, back in 2003, 2004 at Cirrus Logic and things like that. And then I moved on to writing DSP firmware, basically C software for a lot of mobile phones. And I used to manage billion-dollar cell phone projects at one time. But I left all of the technology industry to read books full-time. And that's what I do. I mean, my business is 2,000 books. And I read and summarize business books, personal development books. And productivity is one of those like things I geek out on more than anything else. It's just one of those things that never ceases to amaze me, how deep the rabbit hole goes as to how much more we can get out of ourselves if we just apply the right principles at the right time.
Wow, so you're like one of those real engineers, not like us pretend ones, huh?
Yeah, I'd like to think I used to be a real engineer. Now I'm a pretend engineer because I just throw that out whenever people are like, oh, I'm a coder too. I'm like, yeah, I used to be one too. Or I used to be an engineer too, but no more. So now I'm just a businessman.
Yeah, he's a real nerd. He has a physics degree and reads lots of books.
That's right. Physics, electrical engineering, computer engineering, and now books. Like,
there you go.
Nice. Yeah.
And assembly level. Like, shit, man. Assembly. It doesn't get better than assembly coding. I don't know if any of you guys have done assembly, but it's like the lowest level of coding where you're literally dealing with, you're more or less on the silicon at that point, dealing with registers and shit like that.
Yeah,
I do have a quick
systems class at BYU, and I took two of them actually. And yeah, it's like debugging it stopped.
Oh, debugging is horrible.
So then you take it to the emulator and you plug it into the emulator, and oh crap, it ran.
Does WebAssembly count?
I don't know about that.
I think I can.
VM. You could debug that. What are you trying to break in with, David?
I say, I think I can beat all your stories. I know a person who spent, I'm not kidding, a year programming, and he was there at the university library, and a student saw him, and he said, you know, there's an assembler, right? He was down lower than the assembler. He was so grateful to find the assembler to make his life easier. He didn't know anything yet. It was early days, 70s.
Do you have a stack of punch cards with him?
Oh, it was all notepads, and then it was registries directly, you know, on switches on the computer he soldered together himself. In the day.
I guess in the 70s, my parents were college students, and they both took programming classes and had the big stacks of cards.
What?
We used to use those for our note cards for our productivity. Segueing back into our topic, but yeah, we used to keep our task lists on punch cards just because there were so many old punch cards kicking around nobody could use anymore.
Yeah. And that's like what I learned in the process of doing a lot of this reading on productivity and learning about productivity is that whether I was doing management, whether I was doing like managing $1 billion cell phone projects or whether I was writing code, the principles didn't really change. What changed were how you maybe applied them a little bit, but fundamentals of productivity never change no matter what you do in life. And coding is one of those things that's like one of the most mentally demanding when you get into it and when you're trying to debug or when you're trying to put things together. It can be really like, I remember times when I would be so harassed by a problem that I would go to the office at 4 a.m. just because I couldn't sleep anymore because the problem was like had taken over my life. And I'm sure you guys have been there where you're like coding and you're trying to debug. And at some point it's just like, God damn, man, got to figure it out. And it just takes over everything. You can't stop thinking about it at some point.
Yep. I want to kind of set the stage a little bit here because I think everybody kind of comes at what they think of as productivity a little bit differently. You know, some people productivity is kind of this pipe dream of, I sit down and I stream code from my brain to my machine for hours on end. And for other people, it's, you know, I get a certain number of user stories done. For other people, it's that word that my boss keeps throwing around because we're not getting enough done. And so when we're talking about productivity, how do you define it? I'm curious how everybody defines it, but to kind of set the stage for the discussion, you know, when we say productivity, what do we mean, Manny?
Yeah. So first of all, I want to make the distinction between effectiveness and efficiency, because there is a huge difference. Efficiency is doing things the right way, but effectiveness is doing the right things. And that in itself is a huge leap for most people. Figuring out what's the right thing to do rather than trying to do something the right way. A lot of the times we spend our time and efforts on doing the small things, the little things that really don't move the dial, that really don't move the lever, that there's no, you know, leverage there. While on the other hand, doing the right things has all the leverage. And even if you don't do them perfectly, you're going to get a lot more out of that effort. So productivity in a nutshell is being able to get the most out of your time in terms of the long-term results, not in terms of just doing for the sake of doing. And that's where it's really key distinction, because a lot of times we get confused and we say, if I'm sitting in office and if I'm there from 9 a.m. till 7 p.m. and if I'm just like in front of the computer and doing something, I was extremely productive. Or because I was there for 10 hours, 12 hours, I actually was, I had a busy day at work. Busyness is not the same as productivity. Productivity is for pound for pound, whatever effort you put in, how much, like what's the max result you can get out of it?
I like that.
When you're talking about this, it really hits home for me right now. We've been trying to build a company. Just Nathan and I are building this company, Code Fund. And so much of what we need to do has been kind of mapped out and prioritized as far as we can tell on the priority. But I don't know if this is more just my personality, or maybe it is the personality of those people who are like actually run the company or own the company or whatever. But to me, I'm constantly feeling a sense of guilt for not working on everything, for not doing everything. And so as you mentioned that, for me, it's really hard to kind of grasp and say, you know what, it's okay to just focus on this because this is going to have the highest impact, but there's these 10 other things that do need to be done. And the longer we push them to the bottom of the list, they're never going to get done. Mm-hmm. So how do you handle the guilt around that? Or how do you bring in the human aspect of this and make it so that at the end of the day, you just don't go binge drink and like, you know, just like, I'm done.
fair. So Eric, I think one of the challenges with what happens when we start to feel guilty about all the other things that are not getting done is we tend to multitask. We tend to switch between task and task and task. Is that happening? Is that one of the challenges you run into when you find that you're overwhelmed or you're like you feel like, oh man, I have all these things? Then you're switching, you're checking this, you're checking that, you're you're going between five different things rather than doing that one thing. Is that right?
You're dead on. Even today, I've been bouncing back and forth, and it's hard to stick with one thing.
Yeah. One of the most dangerous things, and this is where discipline of your effort is going to come into play. One of the most dangerous things for productivity is multitasking. I know all of us, or most people, like to think that they're really amazing multitaskers. Maybe the rest of the world is not a multitasker, but it's just like coding. I mean, you guys, if you've done you've done coding, you realize every time you initiate another process, every time there is a context switching cost, right? There's switching cost every time you try to do something else rather than the main process that you are trying to get the computer to do. And the more you initiate the number of tasks that are going on at any given time, the lower your productivity will go, the lower your overall output will go. So the key for the situations that you find yourself, Eric, in, is to take stock of all the things that need to be done, identify what's the most important right now, and then block out time. So what you're going to do is you're going to literally block out 30 minutes to an hour where you are allowed no distractions. So there's no email pop-ups. One of the big challenges that people have is they have too many distractions coming their way. The phone is beeping. The emails are coming in. There's a Facebook notification. There is IM coming in. When you are doing your most important work, you've got to turn all of that off. You've got to shut off all distractions. No email notifications. No Facebook notifications, no Twitter notifications. Everything has to be turned off for you to be able to do your high quality work. Now, what you can and what you will often find is that if you give yourself those 3 to 4 hours of high quality work, what Chuck and I did an experiment a few weeks ago, Chuck, myself, John, and our friend Josh from Simple Programmer, we did an experiment where we're doing Pomodoros, where 25-minute timer, where you're not allowed to do anything else but one thing. And we did
I'll see if I can find the episode where I complained about, or we talked about that.
You complained about it, but you know it was the best thing ever. So what we used to do, what we did was we did 8 Pomodoros before 12 p.m. That means 4 hours, more or less, of dedicated work where nothing, no distractions were allowed. And then you can go and do other things. But you can structure it in your own way. But the key is to be able to get those chunks of time where you are not allowed to do other things. You get freedom. You get a lot of freedom when there is a boundary. Structure will lead to freedom. Freedom is not freedom by itself. Structure is freedom. And you need to create that structure, that boundary of time, that boundary of, this is the only thing I work on right now. And that will stop the overwhelm. That will stop the madness. Because in this moment, I am free to work on this thing. And now you can be really creative. You can give your very best.
It sounds like the subtext of this, or maybe my subtext of this, is that this is a big part of stress management as well. It's mm-hmm. not just getting things done, but living with myself while I'm trying to get it done.
Yeah. Multitasking is one of the biggest stressors, by the way, because mm-hmm. you are constantly running your brain in 10 different directions and the brain feels frazzled. It feels like it's been all over the place and it gets really frustrated in some ways after all of these, like pulling you in this direction, you're pulling yourself in this direction, that direction. It's very confusing. It's very challenging for the brain to do this constant back and forth switching. The switching cost is so big in so many different ways. It's amazing. At some point, I wanted to do an exercise with you guys here. It's really simple. Exercise that will show you the power of multitasking versus the power of single tasking, like how powerful single tasking is compared to multitasking. So we'll do that. It'll be fun.
This brings to mind, 2 years ago, I hired Jamie Masters. Mm-hmm. She's the host of the Eventual Millionaire podcast as a coach. And she sent me this packet of stuff that I had to do. And like the third thing on the list was, okay, pull up your phone, delete the Twitter app, delete the Facebook app, delete, turn off these notifications, because she knew that those were time stealers. And it's that same kind of thing, right? And sometimes if you're multitasking, your brain's trying to outsource all these different things at the same time, but the incoming pings are just as destructive. And so it's a combination of the two.
Yeah.
I think that people are actually great multitaskers, but not in the sense that you're talking, in the sense that our mind is so powerful beyond what we can even comprehend. We're able to regulate our core body temperature. We're able to, our brain is able to sense feelings and process sights and all this other stuff. But when it comes to critical thinking, then we have to have that focus shift to only focus on one thing at a time. And one thing I do is with my audio player is I try to only have a very specific song list that I use with no words. It's just instrumental that I only do when I'm programming. Mm-hmm. And I found that by doing that, playing that only when I'm programming, then I'm able to quickly get back into focus on what really matters to me. I don't listen to music when I'm doing anything else because anything else that I'm doing doesn't matter as much as far as doing computer work stuff. So I think that having a way to get focused quickly back onto what you're working on is just as important because sometimes it could take 10 to 15 minutes after a distraction to really get back and focused. Mm-hmm. But if you're able to minimize that time, then you're able to be a lot more productive because you're not having to ramp back up your focus. So in an office space, I think it's really hard to avoid distractions, you know, especially an open office plan where you can't close your door. So being able to quickly get back and focus on your work as fast as possible is going to increase your efficiency.
Okay, so there's quite a few points you made there, Dave. Mm-hmm. I want to go one by one. First thing you said was that our brains are really great at multitasking, but let's make the distinction.
Yeah.
Your prefrontal cortex, the prefrontal cortex is the executive function, like the thinking, the critical thinking part of the brain. That is good for one thing at a time. But there is the subconscious, the unconscious brain that's running the remaining systems of the body. That's doing everything else. But the prefrontal cortex, if you try to do five different things with that thing, it will just get stressed out. It'll just burn out. All right. So prefrontal cortex is where we do our critical thinking. That's where we're doing our most powerful thinking. And when we're doing coding or when we're doing any kind of work, right? So that way, you're right that overall the brain is pretty big. It can do a lot of things, but the brain that's doing coding actually can only do one thing at a time, right? So, and the other part where you said ramping back up, like being focused, getting away from focus and ramping back up. There's a really amazing book. I actually interviewed the author of the book and it's on our podcast as well. It's called The Organized Mind by Daniel Levitin. So in The Organized Mind, Daniel Levitin, he talks about the idea that in order to be really productive, we need to switch between these two modes, task positive and task negative, right? Task positive is when you're really focused and you're fully focused on this one thing and then nothing else matters, right? You're just focused on this one task and you shut out all distractions. You shut out all sorts of things that are going on in your world at the time. Task negative, the other mode, is where you're actually not doing anything. You're not pursuing Facebook. You're not pursuing social media. You're not pursuing email. You're not pursuing TV or anything like that. You are in the daydreaming mode where you're just letting go, where you're just allowing your brain to think freely, right? And that switching between task positive and task negative is the most powerful way to be productive. I mean, Daniel Levitin and I talked a lot about that on our podcast episode. But the key here for most of us is what we end up doing instead of switching between task positive and task negative, we go between task positive and task distraction zone. In the sense, we're all over. We're like, okay, let me check my email. Let me check my Twitter. Let me check my Facebook. Let me do this. Let me do that. And now what we have done in that whole process is we have polluted our attention space. Attention space is, I want to talk about that a little bit here as well. Attention space is the idea of like having this clean space, thinking space. Well, let's say your prefrontal cortex has a limited amount of space to think in. And now you keep on polluting it with all sorts of new information. If you do that, your attention space is going to be, it's going to get polluted and you're not going to be able to do the most important thing that you're trying to do. And this is something actually computer science professor Cal Newport talked about in his book, Deep Work. And I interviewed him on our podcast as well, on the 2000 Books podcast. And the interview, like he talks a lot about, hey, the attention space is where if you are constantly killing it, you're constantly distracting yourself. Even if you work on a project for 30 minutes, but then you go and distract yourself with a bunch of things. Every time there is an emotionally charged thing, every time there's a hook that some piece of information leaves in your attention space, you're going to have depleted productivity. So it's not just as simple as being able to ramp back in. It is important being able to ramp back in, but it's also important to manage what information is coming in between your tasks, like in between. The break is to be done the right way. If you do the break the wrong way, which is after, let's say you work on something really important for an hour or two, and then now you think it's a break, so you're all over the place, you're checking email, you're doing this, you're doing all that information is just killing any possibility of being able to do high quality work the next time around.
Yeah, that's a really interesting insight. Now, I hadn't considered the after effect of the distractions, even when you are focused back in, how they can kind of linger in your brain and kind of seep into your prefrontal cortex, starting to think about that other thing that doesn't really even matter from the task that you're trying to do currently.
It's kind of like when you have a conversation with somebody and it's like, what's that actor's name in that movie, blah, 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 right? And then 2 hours later, you're sitting at your desk and you're in the middle of code. And then all of a sudden it's like, it's Nicolas Cage, right? Your brain's been chewing on it. And it's the same kind of thing, right? So you'd get that distraction. It's still in there and your brain's still chewing on it in the back of your head, even though your main focus is on whatever it was you got your focus back to.
Yeah. And not only that, the more emotionally charged something is, let's say you get in an argument with one of your colleagues or you kind of have an important discussion with your significant other on the phone, now you're in for a treat because your brain is constantly going to keep going back and forth between your coding and thinking about that. You're stressed out about that thing and you're stressed out about your coding, right? Even though you tried to create that boundary of time where in this 1 hour, I'll only do this one thing, your brain is going constantly trying to go away into that and thinking about that thing because that's stressing you out. So the more emotionally charged something becomes, the more you're going to have problems focusing right now. Those things, news, you go to CNN.com or you Fox News, whatever is your jam, and you read about someone talking trash about Trump or you hear about Trump talking trash. Either ways, you are enraged. And now you are thinking about that. You're chewing. Your brain is it's running a background task where it's chewing on the shit. Even if whether you like it or not, it's happening on the background while you're trying to focus on that thing. And that is killing it.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the two biggest, if I remember correctly, the two biggest neurotransmitters that are involved in focus are dopamine and norepinephrine. And norepinephrine is basically adrenaline. So if you're in a heated conversation with someone, your adrenaline is going to rise, which in turn can also lead to your focus rising about it later.
Well, your focus rising on what?
Well, because those two chemicals are so involved in focusing, they're going to cause that like uptake that you get when you're in that argument is going to cause you to focus on that event prolonged.
You're right. On that event, you're just going to be thinking about that damn thing rather than other things that were more important to you at the time. It's easy. I mean, even with road rage, we do that. We do that to ourselves. We know it's not good. We know it's not the right thing to do, but we distract ourselves or we allow ourselves to get into that that rush. And now we're thinking about that rather than, hey, I was just thinking about coding a few minutes ago.
So how do you sort of cleanse your mental palate?
Okay. Literally the same words in my head. Where's a palate cleanser for the mind?
Yes. So there's two different aspects to it. First of all, try to avoid screwing up your mental palate during your peak work hours, right? Have time for email. Have time for social media on your calendar when you check your email or when you check your social media or when you have time face-to-face with people and you need to talk about specific things. Maybe you do it at different times of day depending on how often you need to be involved with those things. Probably the best way I've been able to find other than like really blocking time is meditation. Meditation is probably one of the fastest ways to get back into your zone rather than constantly distract yourself. And for any of you guys who are interested in meditating, you can just download my free guided meditation audio. It's at 2000books.com/meditate. I've been meditating for over 20 years now. I started it just when I was going to college for physics. And it's been one of the biggest gifts in my life. So I can talk a lot about why meditation helps, but meditation is probably one of the biggest answers to this whole equation.
Now, I've tried to I've tried off and on to meditate over the years because I have a doctor's note for my attention issues. So I have ADHD and it's a struggle trying to focus even through all the self-help books and articles and stuff you read online on how to focus better. But I have tried meditation over and over again and just have never stuck with it. So, I mean, for doing it for over 20 years, I'd be interested to know what kind of how you keep going with that for so long.
Right. So one of the things about meditation is that you have to think of it like working out, like training your brain. Just like I've been working out for 20 years, I've been meditating for 20 years. It's a mental workout, not a physical workout. What meditation ultimately teaches us is to become an observer of our own thinking, right? Now, I run a meditation course. I actually do live meditation coaching calls in that. And most often, the biggest question I get is that I'm not doing it right. I'm getting distracted. I'm all over the place. And that's when people tend to give up, right? But the truth is, the observation that you're distracted is the first step on the journey. And most of us, most days, I don't have the perfect meditation. Most days, nobody has the perfect meditation. All you see is your brain running all over the place. But that practice of observing it over and over and over again, what that does is, in times when you are distracted, in times when you have an emotionally charged situation, you can bring yourself back to the present moment because now you're aware that you're running in that direction. Most of the times when we have what quote-unquote emotional hijack, we don't even realize we're in it for 30 minutes before it's already taken over. Like it's taken over our life for 30 minutes and 30 minutes later, we realize that I just wasted my 30 minutes thinking about it. What meditation does is it creates that awareness at a meta level where you're constantly training yourself to see that you are running away in this direction or you're running away in that direction. Don't get me wrong. Meditation is very difficult. It is painstaking. It feels like I'm not making any progress, but you are making progress. It's almost like if you go to the gym for 7 days and you're like, oh shit, I haven't made any progress. Anyone who's seasoned, who's been like training, they will tell you 7 days ain't enough time. Even a month isn't enough time. It takes months and years to chisel your body, to shape your body, to turn your body into something that you want. Same with meditation. It takes effort. It takes constant repetition. It's a practice more than it is something that you do and then you're done for the rest of your life. It's a daily practice, daily training of your brain to be able to become an observer of your own thinking, a meta-level observer of your own thinking.
I've recently been trying to meditate, and as most of us experience, I have a lot of anxiety, and I go through that a lot. At first, the anxiety I was able to pinpoint down to like it's because of this, it's because of that, and now it's almost like a conditioned response. Like when I'm walking down to the basement where I work, I immediately feel anxiety, or when I come upstairs and I see that the kids are there, immediate anxiety. And it's almost like I don't have a point where I could say that this is being triggered because of. But I have been trying to meditate. And like Andrew said, it's harder for me to stick with it because it is so hard for me to dedicate 10 to 15 minutes every day without, because I sit down, like right when I sit down to work, I'm immediately thinking like, okay, I've got 10 things I need to do right now. Mm-hmm. And meditation ain't one of them. You know what I mean? How do you see meditation and anxiety? Like, how do those play together?
Yeah. So quite a few different questions here. I'm going to answer another more of a subtext question that you had there, which is, hey, meditation isn't really that important or anything that you're struggling. You're juggling with so many different things that you're constantly stressed out. I'm sure a lot of you guys have read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of the concepts there is realizing that you should be doing more of what's in Q2 and less of what's like, or let me just say it, more of what's important but not urgent and less of just chasing the urgent fires all the time. Because the more you chase the urgent fires, the more they stay urgent, the more they keep coming back. You're never done with urgent fires. There's always more of those urgent fires coming at you. And until and unless we focus on the important stuff, the urgent will keep popping up more and more and more, right? So part of the challenge for us is to be able to focus on what's important, to be able to identify what's important. So at the beginning of the day, actually, I recommend that people do all their planning for the day the night before, not at the beginning of the day. Beginning of the day is too late. Now you're fighting fires all over again. The key is to plan your day the night before. And the key at that point is to identify what are the three most important things you need to do tomorrow, right? Three most important things you need to do tomorrow, and you put them in your calendar. You block out time, you put them in your calendar. Now, no matter what comes your way, if those three things are blocked out and you won, you did those three things, you had a pretty successful day. And that will take care over time. The more you do that, the more you run this practice of like daily planning and weekly planning and monthly planning, the more those fires tend to go away rather than show up, because now you're thinking more about systems and processes rather than just whack-a-mole all the time. So a lot of this challenge of productivity is us not being able to plan or realize what is the highest leverage, what is the highest value activity I should be working on. You know, what's the most valuable activity, as I would like to say, MVA? What's your MVA? If you are not clear on what's the highest leverage activity, what's the most valuable activity, you're going to just respond to the fires all around you. But once you know what are those things, what are the highest leverage things, and you know what you need to do, then the fires can wait.
Say, one of the things that I did use a lot of the seven habits approaches for a while, and I found that a mistake I often made was that I would put projects instead of tasks in place, things I couldn't actually accomplish. Yeah. They were just this big stress relief. I wanted to put it on the list so I didn't worry about it, but they weren't actually doable.
Yeah.
So I've learned since that I need to break it down to actually something I could pick up right now and do right now without having three other things work out first.
Yeah. I mean, the more measurable it is, the more specific it is, the easier it is going to be for you to register a success in your ledger, if you want to say so. Because if it's just a damn project, it's really very difficult. But so there are two ways to approach any kind of project. Now, this is a process thinking versus outcome thinking. Okay. So let's say you want to write, you're in the process of writing a book. One way to say it would be, I need to finish chapter 3 of the book tomorrow, right? Or I will finish chapter 3 of the book tomorrow. That's the project. That's a task, quote unquote. Now that is one way to approach it. Another way to approach it that might be simpler sometimes is to say, I will spend 2 hours on writing chapter 3 tomorrow. Another way to do it would be, I will spend, or not about the time anymore, I will write 3,000 words on chapter 3 tomorrow. So process-oriented tasks versus outcome-oriented tasks. Some tasks are better suited to be process-oriented, and some tasks are better suited to be outcome-oriented. It really depends on where you are with anything.
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy to create tasks that are much more lofty than you can actually complete in that day. To kind of, I know that I could do, you know, all these tasks when I'm planning out my day for tomorrow, but when it comes down and it gets to that day, I can barely complete one. And then that stresses me out, which makes me less likely to kind of plan in the future. So I think a big part of it is just saying, you know, there's no way realistically that I can get all of these things done tomorrow. So here's my number one task. If tomorrow is going to be a successful day, then I will complete this one task. And if I can get to more, that's great. But if I can only do that one, then it's a successful day.
Yeah. And what happens is, so there's a feedback mechanism here, and you've got to be able to track what you're doing constantly so that you know over time you build that muscle, right? So initially you might be overestimating or underestimating, but the more you track what you said you would do compared to what you actually did, you do it for a day, 2 days, 5 days, 7 days, 10 days, 20 days. Now you know how much you actually will accomplish rather than just having that random idea and then seeing that at the end of the day, you didn't really do it. Tracking is one of the most, like, what gets measured is what gets measured, measured gets done. But measurement is one of the most important principles of productivity, because without measurement, we were like, just, we're not clear on what we ended up doing anyways.
Well, it's funny too. I mean, there's the classic example, and every software developer that's been working in the industry for more than like 3 months has run into this, where somebody has walked in and you've either done this yourself or you've seen another developer do this. How long is this going to take you? And so you give the answer, right? And almost invariably, you're off by a factor of 2, 3, 4, 5, right? It's like, oh yeah, you know, that feature, I can crank that out today. And the reality is, gee, I didn't think about all these other things that are connected to it that I have to worry about. And it's the same thing in life, right? It's, well, man, I can just sit down and I can crank out these book chapters right now. Oh, but then I have to make sure everything still ties together nicely. And my kid is going to come in the middle of it. And, you know, life is going to happen. And yeah. And so, yeah, you can't count on that. And so, yeah, some of these are better outcome focused and some of these better time focused. But yeah, you have to be aware that life isn't always going to cooperate with you on this. You know, you may also just have one of the focus issues we talked about earlier. I mean, there are so many things that go into this.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, how many spouses say, how long is that going to take?
I was literally getting interrupted during this conversation about one of those questions. How long is this going to take? And so I'm multitasking during this recording, trying to keep somebody calm.
Oh my God.
Not my best, most effective moment right now, but it's true. It's a real pressure. People are trying to handle real things and trying to figure out. And I don't have a real answer except for I have a funny example of what doesn't work, but maybe staying in front of it is also a good thing to keep in mind, not letting it sneak up on me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's going to be, at the end of the day, results. And if, Eric, for instance, your 10 things that you have to get done right now, one of those out of the 10 is a priority. You may not know which one it is, but you will soon find out because it's going to be the first one that you start working on. By working on that first thing, you're saying, none of these other things matter because I chose that this is the most important thing for me to work on right now. And if you try to divide your attention between the other 9, then as you know, we're learning here, it's not going to be efficient and you're going to end up spending much, much longer on those 10 items overall. So at the end of the day, the results will be is you have to prioritize first. You have to figure out what is the most important. If I don't get this done today, then people are not going to get paid or someone's going to get hurt or whatever the situation mm-hmm. is. You know, I'm going to lose my job. So, you know, those are the items, you know, you have to figure out what are you going to work on first and forget everything else until you get that one thing done. Then what's the next most important thing?
Yeah.
How does that play in? So I could see how that plays really well with programmers, where programmers, they basically are tasked with a huge assortment of issues or projects that they work on. And then it's really easy to just shut the door, shut the world out, and then focus. And then you can pull off miracles. Now, in my situation, I'm part-time programmer, full-time everything else, operations, finance. Yeah, like everything.
Uh-huh.
I'm also the front line for fire requests, or you know, I'm also the fireman. So how easily does that translate to somebody in that role where they are in charge of basically? It's hard to plan out the day because so much of the day is evolving. The needs are evolving throughout the day. Do you allot a certain amount of time for chaos and say these are my chaos blocks?
I think it's triage too. Sometimes, you know, what was the most important thing that you're working on 5 seconds ago is now no longer that important. Now you have this other thing that is more important. Right. You know, it's a shift of focus and stuff, but that's life. You know, to tell a story about shifting focus on a 10-second basis, this past weekend, I went to the computer store and I took all 3 of my kids who are 5, 4, and 2 to the computer store by myself. And I tell you what, man, I didn't have a stroller and I didn't have a real way to contain them. So my focus was in constant shift. I went there with the priority of buying a desk. You know, that was my number one priority at the moment when I went there. I soon realized that my next priority was quit having, you know, to get my son to quit opening up the candy on the shelf and trying to eat it. Then it was my daughter, my youngest 2-year-old, who was escaping down the, you know, down the aisle and turning a corner. Then my third one having, you know, my eldest one having to go to the bathroom, then trying to juggle the other two with that. So it's a constant shift in priority. And when I soon realized that, it doesn't matter if I get my desk today or not. what matters is I keep my kids safe. That became my number one priority. And no matter what else I did that time, I still kept focus on they're my priority. If I'm focusing on something else, then if they need me or if they're about to do something stupid, which is like every 10 seconds, then, my priority is always fixated on them.
Yeah.
There's a terrific book out there called The One Thing. And basically it talks about how to prioritize this stuff. And the main question is what will eliminate or make easier everything else? I can't remember exactly how it's phrased.
What's the one thing that you do, if you do it, will render everything else ineffective or not so important? Right. By the way, we did a full summary of The One Thing in our productivity summaries, in our productivity book summaries. Mm-hmm. But, I like Eric's question because this is a challenge. And what Dave is saying is, quite a bit of that. A lot of the times it comes down to your courage. And this is something that Peter Drucker talked about in the book Effective Executive. I don't know if any of you guys have read it. That's one of the greatest. Yeah, one of the greatest books on productivity. Ultimately, it's about you having the courage to say no to things in the heat of the battle. That's the executive's ultimate job, is not to say yes to everything, right? To identify what are the most important things right now and focusing on them single-mindedly. So if you're saying you just walk into the office and it's fire, 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 well, I would say now you need to think about how you can either structure your day such that you get time for your highest leverage activities before you even walk into the office, right? Maybe you block out 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is, for the strategic work, for the highest value work that you are able to do as the founder or as the programmer or whatever it is. And then you walk into the office with specific blocks of time in mind. Even if it's like 30 minutes, I would say 30 minutes is better than 0 minutes of focus time, right? If you can say, okay, I'm working on this thing for one Pomodoro, there's the Pomodoro timer that we talked about earlier, right? You identify, okay, this is my highest leverage activity. I cannot not do it today. So I have this one Pomodoro. No matter what fire comes in, I'm turning off all distractions. I'm just working on this one thing for 25 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever the timer is. And then you allow yourself to attend to other fires for 30 minutes. And then you go back to doing whatever you need to do. If that's the level of switching of tasks that you need to do in order to keep the business afloat, well, that's what you do. The thing to keep in mind at all times is the longer the chunks of time you make yourself available, the more value you will create overall. So it's not a linear where 30 minutes means 30 minutes of value and 2 hours means 2 hours of value and 8 hours of 8 hours of non-distraction means 8 hours of value. 8 hours will actually literally be exponentially more productive than 30 minutes plus 30 minutes plus 30 minutes plus 30 minutes. Actually, now I'm reminded of what Drucker said in his book, Effective Executive. He said, even a quarter of a day spent in undistracted in a full chunk of time by itself will be way more productive than dribs and drabs of time spent all day long. So if you were to spend 2 hours on that most important thing, 2 hours undistracted, no distraction whatsoever, that will be way more productive than actually you finding 15 minutes here, 10 minutes here, 4 minutes there, 5 minutes there, and the total time of all of that being, let's say, 5 or 6 hours. 6 hours of distracted time that you accumulate is going to be way less productive than 2 hours of ultimate focused distraction-free zone. Does that make sense, Eric?
It makes sense. It just seems too good to be true, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to put the words to that, but it's almost like, I suppose if I was to take something, one thing out of this podcast, it would basically be that I need to schedule out these blocks of time for these three highest priority items and block out probably 15 minutes for meditation every day and just have that be like a fix. This is what you do when you do it the night before. You block out that time, make sure it's all set up. And then what you're saying is that if I do that, I'll basically be doing an exponential amount of value to the long term of the company mm-hmm. within a much shorter period of time.
Yes. So I'll give you an example. Can I
add something real quick?
Yeah.
The other thing with having all these fires that you have to keep fighting, I've been in that place and it feels so overwhelming. But what I found is that, you know, when I had something, you know, on a given day and I couldn't spend 8 hours on fighting fires, so I only spent 4 hours on fighting fires, it inevitably filled up whatever time I gave it, you know? So if it was 10-hour day, it'd fill up a 10-hour day. If it was a 4-hour day, it'd fill up a 4-hour day. And at the end of the 4-hour day or the end of the 10-hour day, my stress level was the same. And whatever I pushed off, it was still there the next day. Mm-hmm. And so if you block that out with a kid's choir recital or with just getting something, you know, getting the one or two of those priorities done, it's essentially the same thing on your day. And so, you know, your stress level is going to be the same either way, but at least this way, you're starting to get ahead of the fire.
I want to address Eric's point that it sounds too good to be true. And I'm going to like give you an example of how fires really work in real life and how they accumulate and all that stuff and how it used to work. So back when I was working in the corporate America job, I was managing $1 billion cell phone projects at Qualcomm. And one of the things, one of the challenges I had was I would constantly get these customer requests and complaints about this is going down, need to fight this fire, need to fight that fire. All my day was spent just responding to their emails like, oh, okay, let me go track this down. Let me help you with this. Let me remember. All day long, I was just doing that. And it would just be driving me crazy from 8 a.m. till 12 midnight, every freaking night. That's all I was doing. And I couldn't believe that that's what my life had become. Like, I thought managing a cell phone project would be freaking cool. And here I was just, you know, driving myself crazy. When I read Drucker's book, you know, The Effective Executive, and his talk about like, identify what's really valuable. You've got to figure out what is the value you create in this company? What is truly valuable for your business that you are creating? And not only that, like breaking down your day into chunks of time. So I said, okay, let me identify what are the most valuable tasks? What are the highest leverage tasks? And not only that, let me give time for that. What I found out was that once I structured all the cases that were like all the stuff that was coming in, I gave myself 2 hours of time where I shut out all distractions and I said, okay, let me just figure out how I manage this project in a better way. And one of the things I figured is I took my challenges to my senior management and said, hey, these are the types of requests we're coming in. I would like to have leads appointed for each of these areas so they can directly field these requests rather than me having to go run after them all day long. Now, this didn't happen because I was stressed out. This actually happened because I took time away from all the madness to focus on thinking about what is the highest leverage task I'm, what's the most valuable thing I'm doing in this company, which is running this project. And that means I need to give my management a true assessment of what's going on, which I was avoiding doing most of the times because I just didn't have time. In this case, I said, no, I'm going to figure out exactly what's going on. I'm going to tell them this is what's going on. These are the number of cases that are coming in every single day. And these are the number of people that are involved. And we need help on this, and this front. So once I put on more of high leverage, higher value activity task hat, I came up with solutions that I hadn't thought of before. Mm. As long as I was fighting fires, I was just freaking fighting fires. It never stopped. But as soon as I started thinking, what's the higher value activity here? What's the highest leverage? What's the highest value I'm producing in this business? Constantly asking yourself this question, even making a list and thinking about, okay, where is the leverage? Where is the highest leverage? And then focusing on those things, you constantly find solutions to these things.
One thing I'm hearing, and tell me if you would say it differently, is that all of us get pulled into really busy lives, and there's maybe a different mode of thinking that gets us out of that busyness, that firefighting, you know, that it's just really easy, or maybe it's addicting, to get in the middle of saving the day or being the guy or being really busy. But being able to get into that other mode of thinking where we can start to say, oh, wait, this isn't working. My results are not what I would have liked. Now I've got more stress because not only did I work hard, but I actually have more to do than I have time to do it. Is that fair to say that we have to find a way through meditation or other tools or just by being clear with ourselves that we've got to get to other mode of thinking?
Yeah. So Dave, great question. And I think the other mode of thinking is where you turn off all distractions. That's the biggest challenge for 99.999% people. When you are sitting in front of your computer and you're trying to do your highest leverage task, and you got your phone buzzing and you got your email popping and you got your IM going, I'm guaranteeing you, you're not getting that shit done. You're just going to find a way to distract yourself. You got this little dopamine rush every time you open your email, a little dopamine rush every time you check your Instagram or Facebook. You're just surrendering to that all day long. So our job, like if there is one thing as developers, as you know, as coders, we can take away from this whole thing, it is shut down all distractions when you are focusing on that one thing. That will change the way, the amount of work you'd get done within an hour or two. Like it'll literally revolutionize how much more productive you can be just by shutting out all distractions and not allowing yourself those crazy distractions. What Dave was talking about, turning on music so that people don't disturb you. Yeah, without lyrics, that's really good too, if especially if you can get into a groove with music. But the key is no distractions allowed. That is the ultimate zone of productivity.
One thing, I just a real quick admission here. So I did that this year, is I told people that they weren't going to have constant access to me. You know, it was week one of this year. And I felt, just to admit it a little bit, I felt a little bit guilty telling people they're not going to be able to have the right to rule my life and to distract me all the time. And they all understood. But I was the one that was holding back, saying, oh no, I owe it to them to be able to hold me into their thinking any time they wanted, night or day. And that was killing me. It was just way too much stress.
Yeah. As Drucker says, the biggest challenge for an executive is the courage to say no. The courage to say no is where it really, like, that's when the rubber hits the road.
Are there any tool sets or anything that you can recommend? I know that Pomodoro is a big thing, and I've always stayed away from it. Obviously, that's probably not the right choice, but I could see how you might want to come in and have full intention of shutting down everything and blocking everything out. But the accountability of doing so, and maybe that dopamine rush of performing it and being rewarded somehow, I don't know, something that might actually train your behavior to do this beyond just like white knuckling it until you got it down.
There's a tool I use called Freedom, and that literally you can, it's an app, I think Freedom dot something, I'll look it up. Freedom, it's an app on my computer. And what it does is I program it to turn off all distractions for a specific period of time. And I can program it for the weeks and months, or like it will turn off, it will basically block all your sites that distract you. So that way, even if you try to go there during that period of time, you can't do it. So you can decide, what are these sites that I shouldn't be going to at this time of the day when I'm trying to do my most important work or whatever. You can make different lists and just decide, this is what I will focus on, and I will not do anything else. So Freedom is the tool, and that's the one I use. And if you guys are ever interested in a coupon code is actually my name that gives you a 50% off lifetime on their deal. If you guys are interested for that, it's Manny. Yeah. So Freedom is probably one of the best tools I've come across when it comes to turning off distractions without having to white knuckle it.
And the URL for that is freedom.to.
Yeah, freedom.to. Yeah. The key, again, Eric here, is you don't have to go do 6 hours of distraction-free work tomorrow. Maybe you start with 1 hour. Maybe you start with 30 minutes, the Pomodoro. 30 minutes, just turn off your Wi-Fi for 30 minutes, right? Just go turn off your Wi-Fi for 30 minutes and try to do that one thing that you said you would do, or you know, turn off your email notifications. That's one thing we can all do, turn off our email notifications. So we only check when we want to check.
You know? Yeah.
Turn off your email notifications, turn off your IM, and put on a Pomodoro timer for 30 minutes and tell yourself, this is the task I'm going to do. Write it on a piece of paper and then see the freedom. It's the most liberating feeling in the world when you are only working on one thing. It is the most joyous feeling in the world, knowing that you don't have to attend to anything else, especially when that's the stuff you enjoy doing, right? You like coding, and now I'm telling you, for 30 minutes, you don't have to worry about anything else. Nobody's going to walk into your door. Nothing's going to happen. I'm just writing this code for 30 minutes or an hour or two. That's when you get into flow. That's when you get into higher and higher levels of flow, the more times, the chunks of time you have available to that.
That's great. And this has been an amazing podcast, actually. Very, very atypical for what we usually talk about on this show. How do people
got about it a couple of times, and I'm like, Manny,
Like, you got to be on the show, man.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So I kind of want to know a little bit about the 2000 books and what does that mean and how did you get into this?
So as I was telling you guys, I used to manage billion-dollar cell phone projects at Qualcomm. That was my job. But in my mind, there was a part of me that had already said, I'm not going to be in corporate America for the rest of my life. I've got to start my own thing. I've got to do my own thing. And books were one of those things that I always enjoyed learning from. I always enjoyed reading. They've changed my life in so many different ways, just like I was telling you, Peter Drucker's book and all those things. And I would read summaries of these books, and I would find that they were really not fun. They were not engaging. They were not entertaining. They were just dry. Like, Qualcomm had subscribed to all these summaries, and I would read them, and I'd be like, oh, I would listen to them, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to fall asleep reading this shit. So I started doing my own summaries. Like, I decided I'm going to do my own version of these book summaries, and that's what 2000 Books is. So I left Qualcomm back in 2015 to start 2000 Books. We have a YouTube channel, and we have a podcast as well. There's a ton of free book summaries there. On the podcast, I've interviewed a lot of the guests that I talked about today, by the way. So if you guys are into this kind of stuff, on the 2000 Books podcast, I interviewed David Allen, the legend of productivity. I interviewed him on Getting Things Done. I interviewed Cal Newport, who's a computer science professor who wrote the book Deep Work. If anyone, like Cal Newport, like if Eric, you think it's too good to be true, well, at least take some feedback from Cal Newport, who's a computer science professor. He's a coder, just like all of us, right? He's not making this shit up. And his book is so on point. Deep Work is one of the greatest books on productivity in the last few years. I did an interview with him on that as well. I have an interview on The Organized Mind with Daniel Levitin, on Mini Habits, a bunch, probably like 10, 15 different authors, productivity authors on that podcast as well. And then I have a full, like I said, I have a full course where I have summarized 50 of the greatest books on productivity, and that's called 10X Productivity. So there's a bunch of different tools. And so productivity is just one of the many areas that we do book summaries on. It's mostly book summaries for entrepreneurial audience. So we have books on, we have summaries on marketing and sales and mental toughness and social skills and entrepreneurship and startup and all that stuff as well. So a lot of those are paid, as in like you buy packs of summaries, like 60 greatest books on building mental toughness or 60 greatest books on building social skills and interpersonal communication skills and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of different kinds of books that we cater to, but mostly catered towards ambitious people, go-getting kind of people.
So the one that's germane to us is your 10X Productivity, right?
Yeah. So there are quite a few productivity courses that I have. 10X Productivity is the summaries of the 50 greatest books on productivity. But then I have another course, and that's literally the promise of the course is I will help you double your productivity by 5 p.m. tomorrow. It's called Double Your Productivity by 5 p.m. Tomorrow. And it's literally just one simple sheet of paper. If you follow that, you will double your productivity by 5 p.m. tomorrow. I know that because I've done it again and again. I've seen this happen with hundreds and thousands of people, that if they follow this process, this guideline, it's really simple. But if you do that, you will end up producing a lot more. So that's one course. Another course called Never Procrastinate Again, which is about procrastination, like stopping procrastination. Because what I find a lot of the times is there are so many different books and so many different ways of thinking. I needed like a step-by-step process to approach these problems rather than like, okay, this book says this, this book. There's a lot of concepts and ideas, but I wanted to conceptualize it in a way that I can follow the process. So if I have that worksheet and I can just follow that worksheet and get it done, I'm on track. And that's why I created some of this stuff. And the other one that's germane to this discussion is the meditation program as well. I created the meditation course just because I love meditation, and people were asking me about how you can, you know, stay stress-free, how you can learn faster and keep your brain in tip-top shape. And that's something scientific research has shown quite a lot now, that meditation is one of the most powerful ways to keep your brain working at the highest levels possible. It's a workout for your brain.
Nice. We'll have links to all of those courses in the show notes.
Yeah.
Make it easy for people to find. So just go to devchat.tv/ruby-rogues or just rubyrogues.com, and then just click on the Productivity for Programmers with Manny Vaya, and or Vaya. Screwed it up again. Vaya. Well,
that's fine.
If you scroll down, we'll make it really easy for you to find, so that you can get the ones that you're most interested in. That
we'll probably have some coupon codes for your audience. So
okay.
I'll send them to you so you can have them available. some good discounts for the DevChat community, the Ruby on Rails community as well.
Awesome.
For all of you panelists, whichever course you want, it's for free. So just let me know.
Oh, I'm interested. Yep. By the way, I did already purchase, I know I'm like multitasking here, but I did already purchase the a lifetime freedom. I'm serious about this. I need to make this happen. So thank you for sharing all of this with us.
Awesome. Eric, we're talking. Get out of the browser.
Right? <I'm>... That's so true.
It's one of those very meta jokes here. Like, he did the right thing. Maybe at the right time, or maybe not.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to picks because we're getting toward the end of our time here. But thanks, Manny. We usually talk about technology, but I think this is something that has overarching effect on a lot of people. And if people are really interested in making a difference, this is one area where, in a lot of cases, a little bit will go a long way. So,
yeah, productivity is one area where no matter who you are and what walks of life you are, you can get more out of yourself than what you thought initially was possible.
This episode is brought to you by TripleByte. Applying to programming jobs sucks. You have to put the right keywords in your resume, you spend hours and hours on the phone screens and take home projects, and that's assuming the company even responds to your application. Well, if you're a software engineer, TripleByte can help. They work with over 400 top tech companies, from big names like Dropbox and Adobe to exciting startups. You do one brief online interview with them, and if you do well, you go straight to final interviews with the company on their platform. It's like the Common App for software developers. TripleByte does not look at your resume or where you went to school. All they care about is if you can code. I've helped dozens of software developers with various credentials get jobs, and this looks like a terrific way for you to get in and get interviewed and get a job without a lot of the hassle and overhead. You can go check them out at triplebyte.com/rogues. That's triplebyte.com, byte as in 8 bits. As a special offer for listeners of this show, if you take a job through TripleByte, they'll offer you a $1,000 signing bonus. All right, well, let's do some picks. David, let's start with you.
Cool. So lately, I've been revisiting The Pragmatic Programmer. What I've noticed is that the Ruby community is awesome for pragmatic approaches to things, and outside of the Ruby community, not always so much. And so rereading that, rescanning that, and finding, oh my goodness, this is as good as it ever was. So my pick today is Pragmatic Programmer.
Nice. Nate, do you have some picks for us?
Yes, I do. Actually, something that's kind of related to this topic is an article by Paul Graham of Y Combinator fame called Maker Schedule, Manager Schedule. It's actually a fantastic dive into kind of the dichotomy between a maker and a manager, where a manager kind of slices their time up more in more discrete chunks. And when you need to go into a flow state of work, slicing your time that way can be somewhat problematic. That's why I think a lot of developers find late evenings a wonderful time to program, because they know they will not get interrupted during a large window of time. And so they're free to just go as deep as they want.
Nice. Dave, what are your picks?
All right. So one big pick. Recently, this past weekend, got a standing desk from Micro Center. So it was on sale, and I've been having lower back pain, and I found that standing a bit, you know, has helped alleviate that back pain. I guess better blood flow, but now my knees hurt. I have bad knees, so I need to figure out something there. But yeah, but standing desk has helped my lower back.
Nice. I love mine, so I'll plus one that. I also, just to throw in on yours, I got one of those, I think it was like $100. But it was one of those mats that you're supposed to be able to stand on for hours and hours and hours. Mm-hmm. And so I'll pull my chair out, and then I'll put one of the, yeah, something like that, what you're showing on the video. But yeah, I'll pull my chair out and then put the mat down. And that seems to really help, especially with my knees and ankles, because I had the same problem.
Alternating between sitting and standing also helps. Yeah. And the other thing I've used for lower back pain is the inversion table. I don't know if you guys have tried it. Literally, it inverts you for 5 minutes or whatever time you want. So it stretches your spinal cord. So all the compression kind of goes away. 5 minutes a day is all you need on that inversion any given day. It's on Amazon for $100-$150. So good for lower back pain.
Good tip. All right, Andrew, do you have some picks for us?
Yeah, I got one kind of going along with today. It's a book called Make Your Bed by Admiral William McRaven. It's sitting on my by my bedside table, and I haven't finished it yet, but this episode has inspired me to dig back into it. But it's basically 10 lessons from a former Navy SEAL. And the first one, as you can probably guess, is start your day off with doing or completing a task and making your bed. So that's my pick.
He gave a talk on that too. It was terrific.
Yeah.
To go check that out.
I didn't know there was a book, but I'd heard the talk. Eric, what are your picks?
I've got a couple of them. So I've been really digging into the whole anxiety side of things. I'm trying to get that side of my life figured out. So I've started reading a book, and the book is called The Little Ways to Keep Calm and Carry On, and that's by Mark Reinecke. And in this book, he really delves down and explains what anxiety is, what its purpose is, and then the levers that we have to control the degrees of anxiety that we can feel. And I'm only partly into the book, but so far it seems pretty good. It's a short book, which I like. But the concepts that it has are very absorbable. Another book that I purchased that's going to be after that is The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself. It's a mm-hmm. self-compassion book by Kristen Neff.
Oh, yeah.
And so these are the two that I'm going to be working on. Again, I've got this anxiety. I have to have it go away. And honestly, between these and what I'm learning from you, Manny, and what I will be learning from you from your courses, I have pretty good confidence that things will take a good turn for the better. As Nate told me today when we were coming on the podcast, he's like, wow, today is a perfect opportunity for you because it's right what we were talking about. So those are my picks.
Well, the thing I love, I'm just going to throw this in on what Eric said. The thing I love about what you're saying, Eric, and what we've talked about the whole time today is that it's principles of action, right? You're not just giving up. You're not saying, hey, this is the way it is. It's, hey, how can I make this better? And how can I make life go the way I want it to? And I think that's a lot of the real power in what we're talking about. It's not just, I'm going to get more crap done. It's, how do I get to where I want to go?
By the way, I've interviewed Kristen Neff on our podcast. It's one of the most popular episodes I never imagined because this is for ambitious entrepreneurs and ambitious people. I had no idea that the self-compassion book would be such a hit with my audience because my audience skews majority towards guys. Like 80% guys, and I was so surprised. So listen to that episode as well.
Nice. So my picks today, I'm going to pick Facebook, Twitter. No, I'm just kidding. So I have a few things to throw out there. I have been extremely sick the last month and a half. Whole lot of no fun. Basically, there are a few things that have made things better. One is just medicine. You know, just going to the doctor. Not all doctors are created equal, but yeah, we've kind of got things figured out at this point. But yeah, one thing, I've had a lot of pain in my backdoor region. And, you know, so sitting here, right, I record three shows on Tuesdays. I emailed the other two shows and I said, guys, you're going to have to run without me because I can't sit in my office chair and record. And the only chair besides downstairs, I can sit on the couch downstairs or I can sit in my recliner upstairs. But they're both in kind of public areas, and it just makes it hard to do any kind of recording or anything. But I bought myself a Purple pad. Purple's the brand, and it's one of those gel collapsible ones that, you know, support you in some places and not others, depending on where the pressure is. And that has helped me quite a bit. And so I'm going to pick that. And then, yeah, the other pick that I have is, and this is something we talked about on the show, but I have, and I sent this to all the guys on Entreprogrammers. It's the $15 Pomodoro timer. You can hear the little bell inside, right? It's a physical device. I tried using Pomodoro timer on my computer. And what I found is that if I was doing tasks on my computer, I'd probably see about 2/3 of the pop-ups when it was done. But if I set this timer, then it would remind me to go and, you know, stop doing whatever I was doing and take a break, which was really, really helpful. So I'm going to pick that as well. But yeah. And then if you want to hear more from Manny, we harass each other a little bit on Entreprogrammers. And we talk more business over there. But yeah, it's a fun show. So entreprogrammers.com. Manny, do you have some things you want to shout out about for us?
Yeah, I'm going to simplify. I'm going to, in the spirit of simplification, I'll say the pick I have is the do not disturb button at the bottom of your iPhone. I'm sure Android has something like that too. This one, man, it's a lifesaver for me, this little thing here. I just put it on do not disturb for the duration that I'm working on whatever. And notifications can come in. I just won't see them. I just won't even notice them. I won't be disturbed by them until I want to be disturbed. So it's proactively disturbing myself whenever I need to rather than being pinged all the time. So do not disturb whatever iPhone or Android you're using. There is some sort of feature like that.
Nice. All right, Manny, one more thing, and that is if people want to find you, you know, see what you're working on these days, that kind of stuff, where are you?
So if you guys are listening to podcasts, well, check out 2000 Books Podcast. Go by the number 2000 books. Shit ton of books on productivity, self-help, business, entrepreneurship, a lot of summaries, a lot of interviews with authors there. Same name, YouTube channel, 2000 Books, and same name, website, 2000books.com, all with the numbers, 2000books.com. And yeah, that's what we've got going on.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming and talking to us. This has been really helpful. And I think everybody's coming away with big ideas. So yeah, thanks again. Yeah.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good talking.
Yeah.
All right, we'll wrap it right there.
Manny, you're amazing.
Hey, thanks, Eric.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.